It's time now for America in the Balance. Brought to you by Oklahomans for Sovereignty and Free Enterprise. And now your co-hosts, Amanda Teagarden and Don Wyatt.
Welcome, freedom-loving Oklahomans, to another hour of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. This is one of your hosts, Amanda Teagarden, in studio with co-host Don Wyatt.
Delighted to be here. We just celebrated a really enjoyable and, for me, fairly quiet 4th of July in honor of our nation's Independence Day. And we're getting ready to have a big rally down at the Capitol tomorrow for another kind of independence rally. And I know you're involved in that, and I'm sure that you have some words of wisdom to share with everybody that visits that rally tomorrow.
Well, I think our guest will have some words of wisdom. Also, he's speaking. Our guest today is Pastor Paul Blair, and we'll get to him in just a second here. But yes, that rally is a rally for healthcare independence, and it is the state's response, the citizens' response, to the Supreme Court decision on the provisions of Obamacare, the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. And a lot of people were very surprised by the Supreme Court's decision.
That's right.
Part of it was found to be unconstitutional. The individual mandate
under the Commerce Clause.
Under the Commerce Clause, right, was not constitutional, which I think is
that's
a positive response.
I agree.
An acknowledgement that the Constitution's Commerce Clause cannot be used.
Yes, that's right.
You cannot compel people to purchase a product and engage in commerce.
Can't force them into a market that they're not already in.
Yes. Yeah. The other part, which was very surprising, but I think in a way it has lobbed the ball back into the Congress court, is that you guys passed a tax, it says. Congress,
that's right,
in effect, you have now taxed.
And the irony is that's not the way the bill was written, and it's certainly still being argued by the administration that these aren't taxes, but that is in fact what they have to be, or else it's not constitutional. That's clear decision from the Supreme Court. They are taxes and therefore are constitutional.
And I think that if you read the decision, it's 193 pages long, but if you start to dissect it and realize there was not unanimous agreement on just about anything.
That's right. There was hostility, apparently, from insiders on the Supreme Court. Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Kennedy have gotten kind of crosswise with each other and are not speaking anymore.
Well, they'll have to speak at some point.
They can always speak through others. They can write messages back and forth.
The dissenting opinion of four justices, which was Scalia, Kennedy, Thomas, and Alito, as one attorney who's read it, has actually said that is some of the most brilliant discourse on the constitutionality of that bill, and in particular the exchanges where those fit into it.
That's where the wisdom of the court shone.
Is in the dissenting opinion.
That's right.
If you're interested in this subject, if you go to the exposinghealthcarereform.com website, that's exposinghealthcarereform.com, all one word. If you go there, we have a link to the federal laws, and that includes the Supreme Court's, the case filings, original case filings, and the decision made by the court, plus our very brief assessment of it, which, we're not attorneys, however, you can read it.
Right.
That's there. Our website, our main website, is OKSafe, which is OK-safe.com. And, Don, you have a website because you're associated with someone else.
Very involved also with the Tulsa 912 Project. So
exactly.
They have a website called Tulsa912Project.com. And as an offshoot of that, I've formed a group called the Tulsa Taxes Task Force. And our primary tool for communication there is the boondoggleblog.com.
Lots of good content there. And just a real quick, one sentence. How's that case that you have the challenge to the budget process? I see a stack about 6 inches tall on the desk.
I was just going to say, I got 6 inches of paper to wade through. I feel like I've poked a sleeping bear with a sharp stick, and he's mad. I filed the protests a year ago. I filed my briefs about a month ago, and now I've got the respondent briefs, and they're trying to bury me. I think they had to clear cut the state of Montana for the trees for this stack of paper, and realize that what you're looking at right there, that stack of 6 inches worth of paper. I think they had to submit that in 14 copies. So can you imagine how much paper that took?
Happy reading. Happy reading. That's a lot to work through. But it tells you that they do respond if you challenge them in the proper procedure,
yep.
Proper manner.
That's right.
All right. Let's get to our guest. And last week we had the opportunity to interview Pastor Dan Fisher of Trinity Baptist Church in Yukon. And he was in a race, as were about 19 other people.
That's
in
right.
Races against incumbents in the state of Oklahoma. Right. Our guest today, which we're just delighted to have him on because he's a busy guy and he's well-respected in this state. And by golly, it's just a darn shame he's not now Senator Paul Blair. But our guest today is Pastor Paul Blair, Paul is the pastor of Fairview Baptist Church in Edmond, Oklahoma, and he's a former candidate now for Senate District 41 in Edmond. Paul, are you there?
I am. Thank you, Amanda.
Thank you so much for having taken time out of your busy schedule to be with us. And I'll just briefly read what we hope to discuss today, and then we'll get right into it. It says, in June of this year, 2012, Oklahoma experienced an unprecedented number of challenges to the Republican incumbents. And, Don, they deserved it.
They did.
They deserved it.
There wasn't one of them that got primaried that didn't really earn it.
They didn't. We need to do that more often. And we had a lot of grassroots candidates who took that challenge, and they faced stiff opposition from the establishment machinery, everything from personal attacks to outright lies, and most lost in the primary election, some by a very slim margin, I might point out. Pastor Paul Blair ran for Senate District 41 against incumbent Senator Clark Jolly, who's a real piece of work. What happened during that campaign is almost unbelievable, Don, and join us as we discuss this most contentious campaign and Paul's plans going forward. So, Pastor Blair, introduce yourself and tell us where Senate District 41 is located in the state of Oklahoma.
Well, as you just said, I am pastor of Fairview Baptist Church here in Edmond. I was born and raised in Edmond. Of course, Edmond is a suburb in North Oklahoma City. And District 41 basically covers about 80% to perhaps 90% of Edmond and runs all the way out east of Edmond across Interstate 35 and encompasses Arcadia. So although it runs west of Arcadia, it's largely a rectangle that covers the vast majority of Edmond and Arcadia. And it was redistricted this year. It was a whole new set of gerrymandering that took place after the last round of elections. So this was a first election with this particular configuration of district. And again, Clark Jolly has been the senator here for 8 years. But if there was ever a time where we needed to challenge what was going on down there at the state capitol, it was this time, because there was so much evidence against the Republican Party. Because, you know, we have a wonderful platform. You know, for those people that have problems with the Republican Party, the problem is not with the platform. Our platform is excellent. The problem is that these candidates, particularly those that are bought and paid for by the Chamber of Commerce, they run on the platform. But then once they get elected, they neglect the platform and just are self-serving and taking care of the special interests that have funded their campaigns and put them in office. So we tried to put a big challenge against Senator Jolly as well as some other offices across the state. We ran a great race. In fact, word is that we had the lead throughout the majority of this of the process. But the establishment came out with full vim and vigor. And, of course, everybody from Governor Fallon on down actively campaigned against me. But then the thing that really, I believe, hurt is, and now it's unfortunate because people claim that they don't like negative campaigning, but apparently negative campaigning works, because over the last 2 weeks, they came out with several hundred thousand dollars of super PAC money, and they were actually able to do two things. You know, I guess they got a couple of people to question my integrity, but actually there was a letter to the editor in today's Oklahoman from a longtime lady in Edmond that just said, you know, I just didn't go vote. You know, I don't vote for somebody that just fills my mailbox full of mailers, and when the ads went negative, I just decided not to vote. So, unfortunately, and that seems to be borne out because our voter turnout was terribly low, especially for a race that was this well publicized and this hotly contested, only about 15% of Edmond voted. So it seems like, and perhaps that was part of the establishment strategy, that they managed to suppress the vote as a lot of people were so sickened by the process and just stayed home.
I think you're exactly right about that assessment, Paul. We had a similar situation up here in the Tulsa area. The campaign between Jim Bridenstine challenging John Sullivan for the congressional seat got very, very negative, and John Sullivan just absolutely bombarded mailboxes with materials, some of which was directly from him, some was from him with such small print that you had to really use a magnifying glass to see it was from him, and some was from various PAC groups that were supporting him. But they were hitting mailboxes with two and three pieces of mail per day, all negative, all vicious. And it suppressed the voter turnout here as well. We've got, I think, an average in our area, Tulsa County, was about 13%. There were some districts that were better than that. The district that I live in, I think, had almost 25% turnout, but that was for different reasons. But I think you're exactly right. I think that when they finally start to weaken and they can't destroy the opposition, the strategy is probably to just drive the voters to stay home.
I agree with that because our mailbox, I live in Tulsa as well, and the mailboxes here were just sometimes two and three a day attacking Kevin McDougall.
Right.
And that was the Brian Crane campaign,
right,
which was Senate District 39, which I happen to live in that district. And McDougall was telling the truth about Brian Crane's voting record, you alluded to, Paul, is these people's voting records is the evidence of what they're actually doing. They can say one thing, but what they're actually doing is completely different.
Okay. Well, a classic example, they all say, all the incumbents continue to insist that they are opposing Obamacare in every way possible, but the truth of the matter is they keep voting for stuff to implement it.
And they have, and that record is there.
Yeah.
And so the Obamacare issue is not going to go away because it was the subject of a lot of the campaign issues here. But you mentioned the types of challenges you got, and I saw one figure where in your race in particular, Paul, a group, an organization, had dedicated $90,000 in an opposition campaign in Senate District 41. Now, you were the only other candidate, so that $90,000 was spent opposing you. Now, tell the folks who's like, didn't you, if you just say a real brief summary of your profile, longtime resident, goes to OSU, plays for the NFL, for Pete's sakes, becomes a pastor, and is an independent businessman, that is the perfect picture of a candidate that the Republican Party would be knocking down your door and say, please, that's the kind of
that's
person
right.
we're looking for.
Exactly.
And yet, what happened is they protected the guy who's there, who is a less than credible individual, and instead knocked you. Now, why aren't they knocking down your door and say, hey, we got another Steve Largent, J.C. Watts, or whatever? I think it's because they're afraid, because you're not
Absolutely.
Really one of them.
Well,
it's all about the money. And you know, the thing about it is this year was so obvious. We campaign as Republicans. We campaign as being a very staunch patriots. Yet here in Oklahoma, we did not pass the American Laws for American Courts bill. We killed that in the Senate. We campaign as being pro-life, yet this year we haven't done anything in 2 years about embryonic stem cell research, and we didn't even, and we were able to kill the personhood bill. We campaign as being small government, personal responsibility, yet over the last 2 years we have increased state spending by over $600 million, and they attempted to raise another $535 million in bond spending this year.
That's right.
And we campaign that we want lower taxes, but yet this year, even though we have a supermajority in both the House and the Senate, and we own the governor's seat, we couldn't pass a tax cut or any tax reform. The Democrats weren't the problem. The Democrats can't stop us if they wanted to stop us. But the whole issue this year revolved around the control of the lobbyists, in particular the State Chamber of Commerce, and the corporate welfare that we have currently in Oklahoma. Some $1 billion, I've heard a variety of estimates from OCPA, they guess it at around $800 million plus, so somewhere in the neighborhood of $1 billion currently is borne on the backs of middle-class taxpayers, And those that reap the benefits are some of these big corporations like the George Kaisers and the Aubrey McClendons and the like. So that's what this revolves around. They know that I'm a no-nonsense guy, that I'm not going to get bought off, and I believe in lowering the tax burden and making a level playing field for everybody and not creating special favors for certain special interests.
Right.
So that's why they fought so hard. And, you know, you're right. Actually, my campaign manager had received a compliment on some campaign literature that we'd sent out early in the campaign, Amanda and Don. We had done an eight-page piece that basically, you know, full color and basically told my background. Well, State Treasurer Ken Miller actually had the audacity, and I guess he's just clueless and doesn't get this, but he had the audacity to tell my campaign manager that that was the best piece of campaign literature he has ever seen in his life. And he just doesn't understand, because the reason it was so good is because it was real.
Right.
It wasn't contrived. It wasn't put together to try to create a candidate.
Right.
What it was a guy that was born and raised here in Edmond, whose dad was a businessman and a preacher. I'd grown up, went and played football, somewhat of a hometown hero because of my athletics. I've come back to town, built a business for 25 years, pastored a church for 11 years, been married for 23 years, have two kids, I've raised a family here in Edmond, and have tried to contribute to the community. You know, that's just the real story. It wasn't contrived or put together.
But these people, they
think in political realms, and they can't discern reality from playing politics.
You're just a dangerous guy. I tell you, I bet you're on some list someplace saying that this guy's a potential threat to the national security. When you're talking about these special interests, you mentioned the Chamber of Commerce, and there were two PACs that were created that were particularly powerful in this primary election, and they funded the incumbents' campaigns and allowed the incumbents to run the quote-unquote positive campaigns with the smiley faces, like you mentioned, with Fallon and Todd Lamb's picture on there, and anything positive was from the campaign, from the candidate. But all the negative stuff, the very expensive stuff, was paid for by a couple of these PACs, which was, one of them was Coalition for Oklahoma's Future, and the other one was Center for Legislative Excellence. Now, we'll have to have a debate sometime on what excellence is, because it's only excellent if they're getting those billions of dollars in tax credits. But
excellence means they like it.
They like it. It serves our purposes. Yeah. Coalition for Oklahoma's Future was funded by big seed money. $300,000 was put into this by Chesapeake Incorporated. That's an energy production company. That's the Aubrey McClendon you're talking about. The Chickasaw Nation, which actually funds both sides.
Right.
Continental Resources, which is an oil and gas production company, and Rooney Holdings Incorporated. And they had also $50,000 in contributions, if not more, $150,000 cumulative from the Williams Company, Flintco, which is a commercial construction. Boy, wouldn't you like to have an inside on all the state contracts for that one. Rooney Holdings, mm-hmm. which is construction as well. And then Clayton Bennett, who was the chairman of Dorchester Capital Corporation. And then you get in here and they paid $35,000 a couple of times to Alexander. Chad Alexander Companies. He used contract services. So there's a lot of money in here. But
yeah, interestingly enough, Amanda, Chad Alexander works for a guy named Fout Holland. Fout Holland is the campaign strategist that ran Clark Jolly's campaign.
And coincidentally, Chad
Alexander, who works for him, ran the campaign strategy for this PAC, but supposedly there was no collusion.
It's a small group of people that are actually running these things, and Strategies, Font Holland, et cetera, those people have run a lot of the campaigns up here in Tulsa for these incumbents, or the chamber types, and they run those campaigns.
They often go solicit a candidate if it's in their best interest to have multiple candidates in the same race. That was what happened in District 33. They actually solicited Tim Wright to run. He was recruited and then paid to run, and And he's in a runoff.
He got paid to run?
Yeah, $25,000, I think, was the chamber. This was through the chamber's PAC, I think. That's my understanding.
I'm working on the wrong side of this deal.
Holy cow. I had no idea. So we've got the real grassroots candidate. That's in a runoff, by the way, now between Tim Wright, who's the chamber guy, and Nathan Dom, who's the grassroots candidate.
And the moral of that story is it's not over, and these forces that we saw in the primary are still at work in the runoffs and will be at work in the general and in future elections as well.
All right.
We're getting close.
What was really interesting, you know, it's amazing. These campaign strategists, they use psychology very well. And I think that the voters got disgusted, and the voters also got confused. What was interesting, you know, you mentioned a moment ago, Amanda, that these PACs ran the dirty stuff while the candidate themselves maintained a clean campaign. Well, that wasn't necessarily true, because Jolly's campaign came out very early on. In fact, they sent a spy into our campaign kickoff that recorded my comments that day, and then took about 6 words out of my comments, because I actually made the statement that the Republican Party in Oklahoma was filthy and corrupt. And they took that, and by the way, I think that's proven to be true. But they took that, and they spun that, and they used that on their ads and started calling me Paul Blair, the negative campaigner, and then everything, that negative campaigner, Paul Blair. And they planted those seeds in people's minds, and they played the psychology. And you'd go out and talk to people, and people would have in their mind that this was some sort of balance, that both sides were negative campaigning, and that was absolutely not the case.
Right.
While his side was making accusations that I was a liar and was attacking Governor Fallon and was anti-business and all this stuff, and then of course they were making phone calls suggesting that my business had been involved in some sort of improprieties years ago and dishonest business practices, which was absolutely not true at all, and that they were trying to plant those seeds of doubt. And then, of course, they finished it off with these PACs trying to make me look like I was John Dillinger and rode without the phone. but they came out early on accusing me. Well, it's the old Marxist strategy. Accuse your enemy of what you yourself are guilty of.
So
they were trying to accuse me of negative campaigning and therefore create some moral relative balance between the two of us.
Right.
But we did. The only thing negative that we could be accused of doing was just reporting the facts about Senator Jolly's voting record. And if that is a negative, then that's his fault and not mine. But that's the way these campaign managers work. I tell you what, this guy that I worked against, I guess he must do his job well, but if you consider ethics, he's perhaps the most unethical man that I've ever had the privilege or not had the privilege of meeting.
Well, that's that legislative excellence that they're talking about.
It's sobering and saddening to see the depths to which humans can descend in politics, isn't it?
All about money and power.
Yeah.
Well, it really also tells you that when you're describing those tactics that are used, that tells you that those professionals know their audience
and what
buttons to push
to manipulate
the attitude,
the
perceptions. It's about manipulation of perceptions.
Right.
I read a book called Four Arguments Against Television. It was written by a former ad executive who worked in New York City at the height of the advertising business. He was very influential, but he completely exposed the psychology that is used by advertising and why he's advocating. He wasn't just don't watch the commercials. He was advocating against television.
Period.
But he gives very good examples of actually the thought processes and the intentional the scenes that are used in the screen, the words that are used in the screen, the images that are on the screen, to sell an image to the recipient so somebody will go buy their product. Well, it's the same tactic that's used for candidates. They're selling a product, and they're packaging it, and they don't want you to look on the inside. Just buy this product because life will be better.
That's right.
That's exactly what they've done. So these campaign consultants of that kind, the AH Strategies and the Alexanders, all that, they understand who their audience is and how easily they are manipulated.
Right. And by the way, if you think this is unique or parochial to Oklahoma, look around wherever you live, because I'll assure you that the exact same forces are in play where you are as well.
Oh, of course. Yeah, because it works.
Yeah.
And what does the political party machine do? Get out the vote. Get out the vote.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
really a test of how well the campaigning has worked.
That's right.
Because most of those
yeah.
people are faithful voters, and they think they're doing their civic responsibility.
That's right.
But really what they are doing, other than those who are informed and know how important the vote is and what they're actually voting for, is a litmus test of how well the campaigns worked.
That's right.
Not what
yeah.
the truth is, but yeah. how well that campaigned
right.
work. And
yeah.
when you mentioned low turnout, they know that primaries are low turnout.
Sure.
They're even lower turnout on runoffs.
That's right.
So we have a runoff coming up in August
That's
in a couple
right.
of offices here, and it's real important because half the people that showed up, according to somebody who talked
That's
to me
right.
about it, explained this is what happens.
That's right.
Your primary's low turnout, and then half of that number
will be the runoff.
For the runoff. And so you really have to really work hard to find those diligent people who will go vote.
It's sad to think that 7-8% of the voters in a given district will determine the outcome of a runoff.
But we only want the smart ones to vote.
it's just sad that it happened. Yeah, well, I'd be happy for the opposition to stay home, but not really. I really think we are better served if people take their voting responsibility a lot more seriously than they do.
Well, that's critical. And one of the challenges, truthfully, that we face is, and I discovered this, it was reaffirmed over the last 6 months, and I suspect it, and quite frankly, I knew it, but it just became reality. You know, in our day and age, we are largely a non-intellectual people. You know, when you consider the founding era, I was reading a new book the other day, John Eidsmo's Christianity and the Constitution, and he shared in there that John Jay, who was one of our founding fathers, he wound up being the first Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court
right.
under the Constitution.
Right.
But John Jay, when he graduated from eighth grade and went and took his entrance exam to get into King's College, part of his entrance exam was to, now get this, this wasn't postgraduate work, this was his entrance exam to get into college as a 14-year-old, was to translate the first 10 chapters of John from Greek into Latin.
Oh, wow.
You know, that was something that was just expected, but you already knew.
Well,
and, you know, we read the Declaration of Independence and think, wow, this is really earth-shattering. But the truth of the matter is, all of those topics had been so thoroughly discussed among the people and so thoroughly discussed in the pulpits of America
That's true.
Of it was common sense and made sense. Right. And the people understood it and said, yes, this is what we want.
All right, we're going to hold it.
In our day and age, people don't understand the principles of government, the limitations of government, the purpose of government, and quite frankly, they're not interested in even reading a couple of paragraphs to learn about it.
All right, hold that thought. Hold that thought, okay. Paul. We're going to go to a real brief break, and then we'll come back. And our guest today is Pastor Paul Blair. This is Amanda Teagarden in studio with Don Wyatt. You're listening to America in the Balance. We'll be right back.
Do you need to promote your business on the Internet? The Truth in Focus Radio Network reaches listeners locally in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and all across the United States. The shift is on from traditional media to Internet marketing. Stay on the cutting edge with your business. Advertise with us today. Email radio at truthinfocus.org. You heard the word, so will they. Email us at radio at truthinfocus.org.
Like a flood, the battle belongs to the Lord.
And welcome back to the second half of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. This is Amanda Teagarden in studio with Don Wyatt. And our special guest today, Don, is Pastor Paul Blair.
Right. It's a treat to have you with us. Before we took break, Paul, we were talking about, and I'd like to pursue it a little further, the discrepancy between education levels and the subjects of education at the time of our founders versus contemporary times. And I'd like for you to elaborate on that a little more, if you would.
Well, the thing that I discovered, Don, out knocking doors is that whereas compared to our founders, I mean, virtually 100% of the founding era read, and although we look back at them and say, oh, those poor people, they only had an eighth grade education. Oh, don't be fooled. Their eighth grade education far surpassed what we get through 12 years plus kindergarten.
Right.
And these people understood the principles of government, and they also understood very well the purpose and the limitations of government. We don't have a clue anymore. You know, going out knocking on doors, we met a lot of wonderful people in Edmond. And it was interesting that people supported me for a variety of reasons, some because I used to play football.
Sure.
And it's like, well, folks, that's wonderful. I'm glad that you are supportive, and I'm glad you intend to vote for me. But voting for me because I used to be a football player is certainly not a valid reason to cast a vote.
Right.
And there were others that were perhaps supporting my opponent because they went to the same church together. And
right.
Again, that's nice to have relationships, but we have to be more well-informed on what's going on out there.
We sure
and what the purpose of government actually is, and quite frankly, we have got to provide a way where people can easily access the voting records of those that are already in office.
That's true.
Because if this is a representative government, it is imperative that the facts be laid out there so people can be educated with the facts and then cast a vote accordingly.
That's right.
But currently, the way the system is with the committee chairs and the way that they are able to delude people by burying bills and letting them die and acting like they supported something when they really aren't in support of it, and then with the spin doctors that run these campaigns, people are voting based upon misconceptions of
right.
the candidates.
Deliberate misconceptions.
And that's something that we have to fix. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just said deliberate misconceptions.
Yes, deliberate misconceptions, sure. Well, you know, I was listening to some of the radio ads here the day before the election with some of the local candidates here in Oklahoma City, and not even my opponent, but some of the establishment Republicans that were running against conservatives. And one was a representative named Elise Hall, and her campaign ads were emphasizing how Elise has battled for small government and battled to reduce taxes. And it's like, wait a second, she's only been in office for 2 years. And over the last 2 years, the Republicans have a dominant control over the legislature, plus the governor's chair, so Republicans can do whatever they want to do. And we didn't cut the size of government. We increased government hundreds
That's right.
and hundreds of millions of dollars.
That's right.
And we didn't do anything about taxes, except they tried to slip through a middle-class tax increase.
Right.
You know, they had the audacity to call it a tax cut, yet in reality, it was going to raise taxes on some 400,000 middle-class families.
Yep.
So that's the facts. The facts were we grew government. We attempted to even grow it more than we did with the bond issues that failed. Then we actually attempted a tax increase rather than a tax cut. But she had the audacity, and of course it's state chamber paid for ads,
sure.
to say that she stands for smaller government and lower taxes, which of course everybody's for, and she gets reelected to office.
Well, Oklahoma is famous for being the reddest state in the country, and that's because in the last presidential election, all 77 counties did in fact go for the Republican instead of the Democrat. And so they call us the reddest state in the country, but the other let's call it honor that we own is that our local and state government has grown faster in the last 10 years than any other state in the country. At something like 80% increase in the last 10 years, I think, was the study that I saw. And Oklahoma ranks number one in terms of rate of growth in local and state government. And that's really concerning, isn't it?
Well, the red is a blood getting sucked out of our bodies to pay for all of that.
Well, the people are conservative, but the people are uninformed. Unfortunately, our legislature is not. Our legislature has largely been bought and paid for by the chamber and the special interests. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, they have a system right now that they love, and they're able to manipulate it.
Yep.
And I think we have a perfect example of one of the problems with Oklahoma State government, and is that we need open government. I mean, we tried to pass an open government bill 2 years ago to where every bill would get a hearing in committee, and then representatives and senators would be on record for where they really stood on issues.
Right.
But right now, because of the way things are structured with the committee chairman able to just bury bills without a hearing, they're able to say one thing and do another.
Exactly.
Let me give you an illustration. Over the last 2 years, of course, the personhood bill was largely talked about. It was a hot topic during this last session.
Right.
But I found it interesting in reading some of the articles in the Oklahoman that the personhood bill actually passed by a supermajority in the House of Representatives two sessions ago, but it was killed in Senate committee without a hearing.
Exactly.
Now, this year, personhood passed the Senate by a supermajority, then was allowed to die in Republican caucus by polling the caucus, which is something I've never heard before in my life. So in back-to-back years, you have the same legislature. There hadn't been any election. There was nothing in the middle of that. It's the same legislature. Yet on alternative years, the House passed it overwhelmingly while the Senate let it die without a vote. Then the Senate passed it overwhelmingly while the House let it die without a vote. Our Republican governor never had to take a stand on the issue. So everybody can campaign when it comes time for re-election that, hey, I'm 100% pro-life.
Right.
I even stood for personhood. Here,
right.
Look where I voted for it.
Yeah, which
yet,
year?
It hasn't been passed.
Yep.
It's the way the game of politics is played down there.
It's sad to be that cynical, but you're exactly right. We've been lobbying down there on behalf of activist groups now for about 3 years, and that is exactly what happens.
6 years for OK Save.
Yeah, that's right. OK Save much longer.
That pattern gets repeated every year.
Yeah.
And the...
It's interesting because another obvious example was when Brad Henry, his last year in office, the legislature passed a ban on embryonic stem cell research. Of course,
right.
Those of us that are Christians are certainly 1,000,000% pro-life in
right.
all cases.
Right.
And those that are involved in the scientific aspect, of course, embryonic stem cell research has accomplished nothing. You know, blood
right.
cord research, adult stem cells, they've had great success with,
that's
but
right.
embryonic stem cell research has been pointless.
That's right.
But the legislature passed a bill that would outlaw embryonic stem cell research. So the governor vetoed it, Governor Henry. Well, of course, we could point the finger of blame at the Democrats. They're in the way again. They don't care about life.
Right.
Well, we took care of that problem in 2010,
right.
and we put a Republican governor in office. So where have been the embryonic stem cell ban since we have a governor in office?
Yeah.
A Republican governor in office.
I can't tell you how many times I heard Mary Fallon, when she was campaigning, say, if you can get that bill to my desk, I'll sign it. Because
yeah.
she knew
yeah, well,
that she was in control of whether or not that bill would ever get to her desk.
The biggest lie, has ever been told in this state, well, one of the biggest lies, this state has a history of lying, but of entities lying, anyway, but the biggest bogus statement that was out there is, if we get all these Republicans in office, everything's going to be great. They've done exactly as you indicated. They've done
right.
nothing but grow government. And Mike McCutcheon was doing a little bit of research, and he found that regardless of what party letter is after the name, if any one party gets into majority position and holds all those offices, one result happens every single time, regardless of what
that's
party
right.
it is. Everything
that's
grows.
That's
government
right.
gets bigger because there's nothing stopping them.
Right.
The checks and balances is actually gone. The tension between the parties and the
right.
forcing of people to do the right thing.
Right.
They're not morally compelled to do the right thing. They only respond to political coercion.
Pressure, yeah.
Political pressure. And what you just described with that personhood bill, this to me, this was the real big evidence. There's no doubt anymore that the legislature, the Republican Party in particular, is not really pro-life, but they use it as a talking point and a position to be able to put that on their campaign literature,
right.
but it means nothing. It's a hollow
right.
statement, and they don't really intend to actually stop abortions or
right.
the embryonic stem cell research. The universities wanting to do research and development and issue, award contracts to pharmaceutical companies getting contracts from the result of that research on those embryos, and other biometric data that's taken, specimens, oh, yeah. biometric specimens, not data, but biometric specimens that are taken from them. People don't understand the involvement of the universities and their influence on that legislature.
And the research corporations.
And the research corporations and big pharma.
Right, right.
And it's all related.
Right.
And they do a lot of protecting of Governor Fallon to make sure she's not put in
the
position of having to veto a pro-life or Second Amendment bill that really does protect Second Amendment rights.
Exactly.
I mean, they'd protect her. It's really... it's not a scam. It's a well-oiled machine that knows exactly how to manipulate the public.
There's a quick comment that I think we need to make for the benefit of some of our listeners. This is not your daddy's Chamber of Commerce. When I was a kid, the Chamber of Commerce was a pretty reasonable and legitimate entity, and businesses used that as a vehicle for increasing the prosperity in their communities, et cetera. The Chamber of Commerce today is a totally different animal. And it is a globalist organization, and it's manifesting itself in internationalist or globalist political strategies. And so when you heard us earlier talking about chamber-supported candidates, and you may have had an instinct that, well, I like the chamber. Well, if you haven't been plugged into the chamber activities for the last 15 years, please go take a good hard look, because they're not your daddy's chamber.
Well said. That's exactly right. It's a completely different, they're politicized and agenda driven.
Right. Before we run out of time, I understand, Paul, that there's a defamation suit that kind of evolved out of your campaign. I wonder if you could be free to share with us and our listeners a little bit about how that came about and what its status is.
Well, I can share just a little bit because it is a active lawsuit, so I can't say much. But yes, over the last 10 days, and you referenced the over $90,000 that this PAC had put into advertising here in the Oklahoma City area just prior to the election, and they came out and tried to destroy my reputation. Now, the wonderful thing about it is, as I had a 85-year-old businessman compliment me, he said after seeing the commercials, he called me, and he said, "You mean that they searched your business background for 25 years and all they found was that you overlooked paying a franchise tax form one time, a $25 fee, that's it?" And then he began laughing and he said, "You are too squeaky clean for me." And in my business history, they'd made four allegations, but only one of them was legitimate. And 12 years ago, there's an annual report that you're supposed to file with the state, which is just a listing of your corporate officers.
Sure.
We're a small business. We're a C corporation. We employ about 15, 16 people, but we're a small family-run business.
Yep.
And it's along with that report, you're supposed to send in a $25 filing fee. Well, we simply overlooked it. It'd be like forgetting to renew your driver's license and then getting pulled over and find out that, oh, my driver's license hasn't been renewed. Well, no, you're not a criminal. You didn't intentionally not pay a $25 filing fee.
Right.
We just missed it.
Sure.
And we operated for a couple of years without having that filing fee paid. We were continuing to pay our income taxes and continuing to pay our property taxes and continuing to pay our sales taxes, and were oblivious, had no idea that we'd missed filing that form. And then one day when we were doing some refinancing at the bank, it was brought to our attention. I'd say, "Miss Blair, there's paperwork you need to get filed down at the state." "Oh, well, okay." Well, we immediately fixed it.
Sure.
No crime, no penalty, no taxes due, nothing. But and by the way, I find it ironic that Aubrey McClendon, with the abundance of skeletons in his closet, was a member of this super PAC that was attacking me. And they ran nonstop radio ads and then television ads, all in prime time. I mean, they were buying spots on Wheel of Fortune and then buying spots on the evening news with my picture, trying to make me look like I was a villain and a tax cheat and all this kind of stuff. So it was it absolutely breaks a variety of laws. In fact, I think we have like 27 different complaints against them, but one of which is called the libel of false light, which basically makes a mountain out of a molehill.
Right.
And so we have filed a lawsuit against this PAC and the members of it, and right now we're in process. Now here's the challenge. You know, we just have, as we've seen, we've got a Supreme Court that just ruled that something unconstitutional was constitutional.
That's right.
So you run, you so we don't really have necessarily a justice system anymore. We have a court system.
Right.
And, you know, these guys, when we first contacted their attorney, I mean, this is a group of billionaires, and their attorney basically said, well, okay, sue us. We'll see if you run out of money before we do.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's currently the way the system is set up.
It is.
It's set up to favor those that are the wealthy, and it really is not set up to protect the everyday just middle-class individual. So we do have the suit in, and we have a good standing. We have a great case. But we're just in the early stages of it.
The blindfold may still be on the great lady holding the scales, but one side of her robe is sure distorted by the weight of the money in that pocket, isn't it?
But you know,
campaign contributions do seem to make a difference. And let's face it, a lot of the judges have to run for retention and run for public office. So that certainly should be troubling to all of us.
Right.
Well, character tells, and the way they conducted these campaigns, whether the candidates themselves claim that their hands are clean, if they would allow their supporter that this political machine to operate in this way, you know that there is corruption in their own personal lives, and it will come to light at some point in time, because that's the way the Lord works.
True.
There will
Absolutely.
Be the revelation of truth about these people at some point in time. It may not be this year, but it will happen.
That's true.
Right.
That's true.
Well, and that was the thing that was sad, is my opponent kept saying, well, I don't have any contact with him. In fact, I told him twice to his face over the course of about 4 days. I said, Clark, if you really oppose these things, you could at least issue a press release stating that you would ask those that were supporting you to stop with the negative campaigning. I mean, that would be very easy for you to do. You would take the high ground, and you would look like you were taking the high ground.
Right.
But your silence proves that you're actually complicit and actually approved what was going on.
Sure. No question.
I had that conversation with Senator Brian Crane, who's my senator, and I called him up, and he did return my call and said, yes, Ms. Teagarden. And I said, Senator Crane, I'm highly disappointed with the tone and tenor of your campaign. It's quite negative. And he said, did you see anything that was negative that had my name on it? So that's when we knew that the strategy behind it was exactly that, to protect the candidate and allow the other guys to do the heavy lifting, the mudslinging and
that's
stuff.
Right.
So it's like, well, I hope that your office door continues to be open, because I'm going to be down there a lot.
A lot, that's right. Are you able to look ahead to other political opportunities in the future? Are you thinking you will run again, Paul, or is this a once-and-done situation for you, or do you know yet?
Well, my first response was that I was finished. Quite frankly, I was just glad to have this thing over with. Let me encourage people. We must have patriots run for office.
Absolutely.
We must challenge the system. This deal was a success this year, because the fact of the matter is I was told by one activist organization, as a matter of fact, they humorously awarded me Senator of the Year this year. And I said, what on earth for? And they said, because this is the most conservative we've seen Clark Jolly in 8 years, because he's running against you. So we do make a difference. And we do know that there was some good legislation passed, for instance, the open carry and some other strong constitutional pieces. And those were bones that were thrown to us, because these people were running in fear for their lives, for their political lives. So it does make a difference.
Yes.
We've got to continue to beat on the door until we beat the door down.
Exactly.
But make sure and count the cost.
Right.
It is going to be a challenge. It's not going to be easy, and nobody said it was going to be easy.
That's right.
When you attack the system, they're going to do their very best to stay in power. But, you know, at the end of the day, we gained a number of offices. We may gain a few more, and we did make a difference. And they know we're here, and we're not going away. Now, what the future holds for me, I have no idea. I mean, I will never say never about anything. You know, I anticipate remaining here in the state of Oklahoma. I don't anticipate leaving. This is my home. I've been here for 49 years. I anticipate staying here. And who knows what will happen in the future. We'll just have to see.
When we're meeting with a legislator next year and he's just simply not listening to what we're trying to tell him, and we say, well, we may just have to get a primary opponent for you, they'll take us seriously next time, won't they?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And quite frankly, Amanda and Don, we need to get those at the national level to understand. Even because we've got some good conservatives nationally. I mean, there are some folks like, there are some good conservatives that have a national name,
right,
that have intentionally stayed out of primary races, thinking that they don't want to get in the middle of a fight between two Republicans.
Right.
But they've got to understand that this is where the fight is.
That is the
These
fight.
These elections,
right,
are the critical part of the elections are in the primaries.
That's right.
Because once we get to an establishment Republican versus an establishment Democrat, then there's really not a dime's worth of difference other than just the R and the D in front of the name.
That's right. That's true.
I appreciate your encouragement, and I want to leave us, before we go on to the next subject, with a scripture that our pastor has used frequently, just to remind you that you do need to stay in the battle, and it's from 2 Samuel 3, and it goes, "Now there was a long war between the house of Saul and the house of David, but David waxed stronger and stronger, and the house of Saul waxed weaker and weaker, and unto David were sons born in Hebron, in his firstborn," and it goes on and on. The point here is that the house of Saul could be represented by this establishment,
right,
that is destroying our liberties and is the old way, and that the house of David are those Christians, those Bible-believing Christians that need to come up,
that's right,
from amongst the ranks and realize this is a long battle. You,
yep,
may not lose a long war. You may not win every single battle, but you stay in it.
That's right.
And know that it may take several years, maybe generations, to turn this country back.
Exactly right. And as the fabulous song at the bottom of the hour says, the battle does belong to the Lord. It's
It is a spiritual battle, and we saw that spirit that was present,
yep,
and it was not good.
That's right. That's
so
exactly
that's the
right
battle that we're fighting.
Yep.
Paul, we're going to talk briefly about, thank you very much for being our guest. We're going to tell you about a bad bill because we might ask your help later on. And trying to do something about it. And that was the Water for 2060 Act that this past legislature passed. Mary Fallon signed it on May 21st. And this bill actually says that the public policy of the state of Oklahoma is to establish and work toward a goal of consuming no more fresh water in the year 2060 than is consumed statewide in the year 2012. Now, what do you think about that arbitrary cap on water usage for the next 48 years? That's two generations of people.
It's ridiculous.
So they're going to begin water rationing. I guess it'll be back to the old days of the number 9 wash tub and one bath on Saturday nights for the whole family to share.
Yeah, like my father-in-law used to say, bathe once in the summer and not so often in the winter.
Oh, boy, I hope it doesn't get to be that. But we also, last week we were talking about, or 2 weeks ago, being able to use the bathtub water and just scoop it up and go water your garden, because that's, they also are wanting to encourage people to use gray water, which is
vein, we've been pushed hard recently to the European socialist model, and I have been to Europe on several occasions, and one of the comments I get when I travel overseas is, you Americans all smell funny. You all smell like you just got out of the shower. And and it is true. There's a definite difference in hygiene habits in the cultures. And I think their goal is to make us like the Europeans. That's not a plus for me.
There's so many people that admire, well, it's continental. It's like, holy cow, let's think this through. All right. Well, there is an option for that. When the governor of a state fails to do her job and protect the people of Oklahoma, they have an option, and it's a legal option.
Right.
Just like in the legislature, they have an option to advance a bill called a discharge petition.
Right.
The people of Oklahoma can engage in something called a veto referendum, and
right,
the people can, in effect, veto a bill.
Right.
Now, it's a process, and they've got 90 days after the end of session to file their intent with the Attorney General. They approve the language, and once it's approved, you have 90 days to collect roughly 55,000 signatures,
right,
which is doable.
Right.
And maybe that dog in the background could help us get those signatures, drum up some interest.
There you go.
Arnold.
Sorry, Amanda, we've got, that's they're okay, mowing the yard, and the dog's going crazy.
We've heard all kinds of things here. But the idea is that the people still have a recourse. The government is supposed to be of, for, and by the people. And
that's
we
right
do have a legal mechanism by which we can right begin to veto bad bills, bad
right
legislation, if we will exercise
right
it. So we need to actually maybe practice that process with this Water for 2060 Act.
And for Oklahomans, listeners in Oklahoma, that's all in Title 34. That's where all the rules for this process are defined.
Oklahoma statutes.
And it's spelled out pretty clearly. I think it's not beyond reason to read and understand. So get yourself familiar. It's a tool that I think we as the people are going to have to learn how to use more effectively.
We are just about out of time, and we have a couple of minutes left. Well, Paul, is there anything else you want to add before we close out this hour of America in the Balance?
Well, as you're sharing some of this information, it is imperative. And one of the things that has happened over the last 2 years that's been so positive as people, actually the last 4 years, people have actually begun reading the Declaration, reading the Constitution, trying to educate themselves. Programs like this, plus networking, these Tea Party organizations, Birch organizations, places like that where we can interact and network with each other. Just as an illustration, you're talking about the trying to get 55,000 signatures in a short period of time. It is imperative that we stay educated and keep communication with each other so that we can act, because quite frankly, the government of the people, by the people, and for the people is under attack right now. We've got to take a strong stand and not bend any farther and begin to push back. So I appreciate the work that you all are doing.
Well, thank you. We appreciate the role that you and Dan Fisher have in a really powerful movement that's called the Black Robe Regiment. Thank you for the work you do in that field as well, Paul.
Thank you for being our guest today. And we're out of time here, but we do thank you. We're going to have you back again. This is Amanda Teagarden with my co-host Don Wyatt. This has been America in the Balance. We want to thank you for listening, and may God bless you.